Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Coach Baseball Right podcast. I'm your host and founder of Coach Baseball Right, Steve Nicolarat. Join us as we go inside, outside, and all around baseball, discussing how to coach baseball the right way. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to thank all of you who have already subscribed to the Coach Baseball Right podcast. We truly appreciate your support. If you haven't subscribed yet, we'd love for you to join us by subscribing to our podcast. You can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. Every episode, along with all of our coaching and administrator resources, is available on our website, CoachBaseballRight.com. We launched Coach Baseball Right back in 2008 to create a go-to resource for organization and league administrators, club and team coaches, and families to help create and transform better, more meaningful baseball experiences for their kids. In today's Coach Baseball Right podcast, I'm really excited to share our interview with Richard Schenck, also known as Teacher Man. In today's podcast, you will learn about the pillars of the high-level pattern swing, where to begin when teaching the swing, and how to read video. You will hear Richard talk about metrics and his ideas on how to work with a coach who might not understand HLP. Sit back and enjoy our discussion with Teacher Man. Hi, everybody. We're here with Richard Schenck, also known as the Teacher Man. Richard, welcome to our Coach Baseball Right podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Richard lives in St. Louis and is a very, very well known across the baseball world for his high level pattern hitting instruction. And we're really excited to have him with us. I have so much I want to talk to you about, but I first have to ask you one question. Teacher Man, where did it come from?
Interesting. I moved to St. Louis in 1978, I believe, and I was an avid pool player. And I would play pool leagues and tournaments, and I was also a high school teacher. And nobody could remember my name, but they remembered that I was a teacher. And over time, teacher turned into teacher man.
Wow, that is awesome. That's a great name. It fits you very, very well.
Thank you.
So if I wanted to ask you to break down some basic truths or pillars, I mean, if you know, every good thing has pillars it stands on. What are the pillars that the high level are based upon?
Okay. Well, the first overall premise is launch quickness, which is the time between your decision to swing and the launch of your swing must be instant. It must be instant, quick, very sudden. Most people think I'm talking about launch to contact. I'm not. I'm talking about the time between you decide to swing and you launch the swing. And that's what's made the biggest difference in my clients. So the fundamentals that you have to do to have that launch quickness, a couple of them, you have to have your hands instantly ready to what I call snap the bat. And you have to be able to do it from your back leg. If you have to shift your weight first, after you've decided to swing, but before you can swing, you'll never have launch quickness. If you have to reset your hands after you've decided to swing, but before you can swing, you'll never have launch quickness. And launch quickness gives the hitter more time to read the pitch. And as an instructor, I'm often saying, there's nothing more important that I can give a hitter than more time. If he has more time, he's going to make better decisions. He's going to hit the barrel more often.
Awesome. Other premises? Other basic things that lay the foundation for this?
If we can go into a lot of details, but when I mentioned you have to launch from your back leg, as you launch, the weight will shift, but you have to launch from the back leg. So that back leg has to be loaded properly. I call it you twist that leg, you screw your rear foot into the ground. And then when you launch the bat, that leg instantly unwinds and that provides the power.
Awesome. Okay. Do your students often have any issues with, not understanding what coiling around the back leg, means?
Yes, oftentimes. I mean, that's a work in progress. You have to get them to understand that the coiling of the torso, the coiling of the hip, it happens in the rear hip socket. It's not a two-hip coil. It's a coiling that happens that bottoms out the rear hip socket. And in the process of doing that, your leg will wind up, your leg will twist, your foot will get screwed into the ground. And it's very possible, and I see this fairly often, that they'll coil their hip, but they don't get their leg twisted. And so we have to make sure that that movement does the right thing. Oftentimes you can see the hip coil. You can see they're doing that, but it's not loading the leg. And so we got to make sure the leg gets twisted.
So when the leg is twisted, they should actually feel something from, if it was a right-handed hitter, all the way from their rear foot, their right foot, all the way up through their knee, all the way to the right butt cheek. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. Yep.
Okay. Now, let's suppose that you're starting with, a grade school junior high player. Okay, he walks into your door. Where do you start with him? What do you do first?
The very first thing I do is I get them to understand what I call the hand snap. Earlier I mentioned part of launch quickness is you've got to have your hands ready to instantly torque the handle. And so that's step one, that's fundamental one. Torquing the handle sends the barrel backwards toward the catcher, and then the leg, as it unwinds, sends the barrel forward toward the ball. And this torquing of the handle is almost always brand new to everyone. And so I've got to start there and make sure they understand that you have to instantly apply torque into the handle of the bat when you decide to swing. So I have a couple of tools that help me do that. I have something called a whip stick, which is a slender tube, if you will, a metal tube with BBs in it. And when you torque the barrel properly, you can hear the BBs fly from the handle to the end of the bat, backwards toward the catcher. And if they're swinging that and their torque is late, they'll feel the BBs going toward the opposite batter's box, not toward the catcher. If you're instant, they'll go back to the catcher. If you're not instant and you move your body first and then do it, they're going to go toward the opposite batter's box. And I have another tool that has a ball on a stick, if you will, and as you snap the torque the handle, the ball will go backwards and you'll hear a little click move. That verbal, that audio hearing of the BBs going backwards or the ball clicking the end of the bat is huge. It helps them understand what I call the hand snap is.
If you were starting with a high school or a college kid, a little bit more advanced, would you start in the same place?
I do. Everybody I ever start with, I start with the hand snap. Some of them, not very many, but some of them are already doing it. Most of them aren't. And well, the two very things I talked about, the snap of the hands and swinging from one leg, most people don't do it. And so I always start with the hand snap to get that right. And then once we get that right, we go to the leg.
Okay. So now it kind of takes me into the next question was, what does a typical 30-minute or 16-minute session with you, what does it involve? I'm assuming you start again with the hand snap, then the one leg, and then what happens?
Okay. Yes, we spend time with the devices that help the hand snap, and then we go to the leg. And the first thing I do is I have them stand on their back leg, like a stork, or what's that other animal, the bird that stands there, pelican or whatever.
Okay.
Anyway, they kick the leg back, their front leg, they kick it back away from the plate. Not toward the catcher, but away from the opposite batter's box is the best way to say it. And
Gotcha. Okay.
they stand on their back leg. And the first thing I'll have them do is they'll hold the bat, but we're not going to swing it. And they're just going to pivot in their rear hip socket. and not let their front leg come down and pivot as far as they can, get their belly button to go all the way around without having to put their foot down. And if they have to put their foot down, they're shifting weight. I've got to get them to understand how far they can get that belly button around without the weight ever shifting off of their back leg. What's really interesting, if I have a right-handed hitter who's a shortstop or a second baseman or a third baseman, they already do that hip socket move when they turn a double play. And most of them can pick it up pretty quickly. I'm talking about the action in the hip socket, not the bat, not the arm, but the action in the hip socket. They already do that when they turn a double play. And when I explain that to them, they'll pick it up pretty quickly. Not that others can't do it, but those guys find it the first, or the earliest, I should say. So then I'll have them do the same thing, but let their toe come down. Their rear leg is still pointed back away from the opposite batter's box, but I'll let them put their toe down. That gives them a little kick, a little stability. It kind of acts like a kickstand, and do the same thing. Pivot in that rear hip socket and get the belly button to come all the way around. And then we'll do that, and we'll actually snap, go back to the hand snap and snap the bat backwards. And if their leg is working right, as soon as they snap the bat backwards, the leg turns them right to contact.
Awesome.
And so those are the basic concepts that I've got to get across. And then we just really work hard at it so they can do it to where it's kind of automatic. They don't have to think about it.
Okay, and that's kind of like that's sort of where you would start for your 30-minute or 60-minute session. And is the command drill something that you would get to early in your lessons or no?
Oh, yes. That's a staple in the first lesson. The first lesson is usually an hour, and we'll do what I just said, and then we'll learn to do it from a normal batting stance. We'll get the same rear leg feeling from a normal batting stance. And then off the tee, and then we'll go to the command drill where I have them get completely 100% loaded, ready to swing, and I'll give them the command. And if they're good, they'll swing instantly with no time between hearing the command and launching the bat. Most of them aren't quite right, even at that point, but within a few minutes, they'll understand what quickness is. They think they're quick, but there's a quicker level. And when they find that quicker level, I'll get a look from them like, oh, wow, that's different.
Yeah.
But the command drill is a staple. Every lesson I give, we do that.
Okay. When you're working with a kid and you're trying to communicate, you know, the coil, the stretch, the moving forward for the 3D load, there's also a clamping of the scap.
Mm-hmm.
How do you teach that to a kid?
That's an interesting concept. First of all, I say clamp it or pinch it into your spine and don't let it move. Now, this is going to vary from when someone calls it a scap load. I don't call it a scap load because when you load something, you load it to unload it. So pitchers or throwers, they're going to pull their scap back into their spine and then they're going to unload it as their arm throws the ball. A hitter needs to keep that. They need to get the scap into the similar position, but they got to hold it there all the way through the swing or as long as they possibly can. So, you know, sometimes I'll do it drastic. I'll say, okay, pinch it real hard into your spine and don't let it move as you swing the bat. Now, as the bat comes around the corner and goes through contact, you can't hardly hold it. But what you're not doing is you're not pushing it. You're not, it gets released, but you're not unloading it. So that can be a challenge. It's not usually too much of a problem once they understand it, but getting them to understand it can be a challenge.
Okay, you just mentioned the corner. You know, for a lot of the people that are new to what you're teaching, would you mind spending just a few seconds, a few minutes talking about the corner and how you teach it?
Okay. Let's assume you stand with a square batting stance, meaning you're not standing open, you're not standing closed. You have a square batting stance, and you coil in your rear hip socket around your back pocket, goes back around toward the pitcher. That will generally bring your front heel off the ground. So you're standing there on both legs, square stance, you coil your butt around, and your front heel comes off the ground. Now you're standing there with your weight on your back leg. So you've coiled your hip, and that creates the corner. When you do that, you started with your feet square and your shoulders square. Then when you do that corner, when you create that coil, your feet are still square, but your shoulders are now going to be pointed toward the opposite field slightly. Not a lot, and that's something you have to caution. You can't go too far. A lot of kids like to really move those shoulders around. The shoulders only move to the degree the hip coil coils, not further. So that, in effect, is the corner. When your shoulders are offset, pointed oppo a little bit, but your toes are still pointed at the pitcher, I call that the corner, okay? You've created the corner in the rear hip socket. Now, from that position, you're going to Ferris wheel your shoulders, not merry-go-round them. In other words, the front shoulder is going to come down, the rear shoulder is going to go up. The front shoulder is not going to go forward toward the plate, it's going to go down. If you can see in your mind's eye Barry Bonds' swing, when he would toe tap back, his lead shoulder would come down, his rear shoulder would go up. That's the Ferris wheel move, okay? So the corner is in the hip socket. You've coiled your hip socket, which has twisted your leg. And then when you Ferris wheel the shoulders, you're stretching your back. And then we snap the bat directly rearward from our shoulder line. And the leg will just explode and turn everything forward.
Okay, and
I think that's
hand,
a pretty good explanation, but it might be tough without a video.
It's awesome. But your hands, you always want everyone to launch behind the corner. Is that correct?
Yes. The hands will always feel like they're snapping the bat rearward from a position behind their rear leg.
Okay.
Not even with it, not in front of it, behind it. That happens from the coil, and it happens from the Ferris wheel load of your back.
Yeah, and that's so important because so many of the younger kids, they actually begin to rotate their upper torso around,
yes,
and they fire or snap late. And
yes,
we have to make sure they launch behind.
Let's take a quick break to tell you about two powerful ways to transform your organization's youth baseball experience. First up, the Start Baseball Right Youth Program. It's a fresh, much-needed alternative to the outdated T-ball model. This program makes it easier to recruit and train parent coaches while giving young players a fun, structured introduction to the game that gets them coming back year after year. And if you're looking to elevate your entire club or organization, check out Coach Baseball Right's Organization Pro Membership, our exclusive all-in-one coaching curriculum, giving everyone, all administrators, all coaches, all players, and even parents, access and support to the best coaching curriculum available anywhere. Whether you're just starting out or looking to take your program to the next level, Coach Baseball Right has you covered. Visit CoachBaseballRight.com to learn more about both programs and see how they can transform your kids' season.
Okay, now here's another question. I often see some of the kids as they get into their stretch position, their rear elbow is up a little bit. It's not overly up, but they've stretched with their back up to the sky. And all of a sudden, when they make their move to swing, the rear elbow moves independently of the front elbow. Okay.
Yep.
How do you fix that?
Okay. So, first of all, Manny Ramirez, Ryan Howard, a couple examples of really high rear elbows. Jeff Kent, an example of his elbows pointed to the ground. So you can do it a lot of different ways. But for your guys with high elbow, what we have to stop is we have to stop them moving their elbow into the slot and then snapping the bat. That is two moves, and that will never create launch quickness. So if they're torquing the handle, the torque of the handle, the instant torque of the handle will put the elbow down. In other words, it's one move, torque the handle, and the elbow moves with it, as compared to move the elbow and then torque the hands. So something that confuses some people is as you're coiling and stretching your back and as you start to move forward, the continued stretching move will lower that elbow. It's kind of hard to put into words. The elbow is not coming down. You're not moving your elbow. You're tilting your torso a little more as you stretch, and the elbow will come down. So in a proper swing, the elbow will come down, but not by the elbow, not by the arm. The torque of the handle will bring it down, or your continued stretching will bring it down. And then at launch, it'll fire in there as you torque the handle.
Okay, so the big thing is if the kid is torquing the handle properly, that sort of takes away the idea that the back elbow works independently on his own too early.
Yes, I do not like the phrase independent arm action. In fact, it's my belief that independent arm action is one of the biggest problems in hitting. You're not connected to your leg when your arm is working independently. If you can keep the arm, the shoulder socket, solid, and there's not any rotation going on of the humerus bone, if you can just keep that solid, you're going to stay connected throughout the swing.
Okay, and that actually was that kind of leads me into the next question. There's a lot of instructors that have students. They have used their arms for so long, they struggle with the concept of not using their arms. And I wanted to ask you a couple drills that you would use to try to get students who use their arms too much to get that out of using their arms.
Okay. My favorite is to put a strap around their neck and have them put their top hand in the strap next to their neck and then take some swings. Well, it's a fairly tight strap. You can't even move your arms because you're locked up. That's my favorite one. And what they will find when they do that, they will find their core, because your core has to really work and turn to get the barrel through, because you can't cheat with your arms. Now, another drill I have is these connection balls. They're kind of soft, but they're like 10 inches in diameter. You mm-hmm. can put that under their humerus bone. You can put that between their forearm and their humerus bone and your back arm. You can put it under the humerus bone in the front arm and hold that ball in there. They'll stop working their arms.
That's good. Good. Those are great ideas. What have you found to be the most difficult aspect of your teaching when you teach the high level pattern? What have you found over time to be the most difficult thing?
It varies, but in general, the concept of creating an arc with your barrel that the ball runs into versus pushing the barrel to the ball, that's the general concept that I have to really hit on and get them to overcome. Within that, there's different reasons why they're doing it wrong. They're not snapping the bat, they're shifting to their front leg. But the overall concept that I've got to get across that takes a lot of time is to feel like you're just creating an arc with your bat, like the fan in your living room that's cooling your living room, the fan blade's just spinning. You've got to get a feeling that your swing is a one revolution of that fan blade every time, and you let the ball run into it versus moving that fan blade to the ball.
Tough one to teach.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible.
Now, here's a question. Video. When you're working with video, okay, what are the markers that you use in the video? What do you look for? Where do you look for it at?
Okay. First of all, I do not like high-speed video, slow-motion video. I like 30 frame per second video, which is it appears real speed, game speed. 60 frame is okay, but I like 30. So if I've got a 30 frame per second video, the first thing I'm going to do is going to play it in full speed, and I'm going to try to see the moment the barrel starts to blur rearward. That is the launch of the swing. Everything before that was loading. Everything after that is the swing. And when you determine the moment the hitter launched the bat, Now you can make some good conclusions. You can see what he did to load. You can see that he dropped his hands in the swing or whatever. And that is the critical marker, in my opinion. High-speed video, you don't see the blur of the bat because everything moves real slow. So once I've figured out the blur of the bat, which I consider the commitment to the swing, then I can play it, toggle it frame by frame, or play it slow motion and make some conclusions. But if I can't see the blur, I'm guessing what was swing and what was launch.
Okay. So after you see the blur and you've identified it, you know where the launch is, you know what the load was, what would you look for after the launch?
Okay. So in the launch itself, all the great hitters are 4 to 5 frames of 30 frame per second video from launch to contact. Now, Barry Bonds was even quicker than that on many swings. But if they don't, if they're longer, if they have more than 5 frames, they're kind of slow in their launch. So what happened? Did they not get, and then I go to the load. What happened in the load? Did they not get their leg twisted? Did they lower their elbow first and then torque, which is going to lengthen the swing? It's going to slow the swing. It's not going to be as quick. Those are the kind of things I look for. There's a standard 4 to 5 frames is good. And you'll be surprised, even the youngest girl you work with, when she launches the bat from launch to contact is going to be pretty good. Even if I'm working with Aaron Judge, it's going to be very similar. And this really highlights the problem is not the launch to contact time. The problem is the decision to launch time. And so then you go to the load and you say, okay, they weren't even close to getting the corner, or they weren't close to getting stretched behind the corner, or they didn't snap the bat to launch the bat.
Okay, that's awesome. There was a podcast that I heard you on, and you mentioned, you were working with Aaron Judge, and you said something like, if people came in today to watch what was going on, they wouldn't see much. All the work was done preceding this. And what I wanted to ask you was, when you first got Aaron Judge and you were working with him, what was it like? What were the things that you did with him those first few lessons?
Okay. I think the very first thing I did was the command drill competition between me and him. I was 62 years old at the time, and he was 24, and I'm not anywhere near in shape, and he's a physical specimen. And I put a ball on a tee for him and a ball on a tee for me, and a third person said, load up, go. And as soon as you hear the word go, you swing. Well, I hit the ball before Aaron Judge every time, and it wasn't even close. And we did it 3, 4, 5 times, and he finally looked at me and said, what are you doing? So I got his attention, and then we went to the corner. I taught him what the corner is and how I, in my command drill, I had preset my corner. I was already in position to swing. All I had to do was snap my bat, and the instant I snapped my bat, the leg would unwind, and I'd hit the ball. And the video showed Aaron not even close to being loaded. And after the go command, he still had to load and then swing. Well, that's not launch quickness when you have to load some more after you decided to swing. So that got his attention. And then we went on through all the drills. I was there with him for a week, and we worked twice a day for a week. And somewhere around Wednesday, it started to make sense to him. And toward the end of the week, he was looking good. Still had to think a lot, couldn't just do it. He had to make sure everything, all the ducks were in line. And then I met him again a week in January, 2 or 3 months later. 2 months later, I met him in January. And that whole week, it started to come together really nice. And then I tuned him up in spring training. I went to Florida and spent a couple days with him and got him feeling it. And he made the Yankees roster. And he batted 8th the first game. And I told his agent, he's the best 8th place hitter in the history of the game. And it wasn't long until he was hitting 3rd.
Wow, that's awesome. Hey, I'm just curious, as you were talking about this, another thought just came in. Hitters that have a hard time syncing up, you know, a hitter, if you can imagine hitters that they get their front leg down and then they swing instead of swinging the front leg down. How do you correct that with a hitter?
Okay. The almost always, that's a signal that they're swinging with their arms, because you can't swing with your arms and have any chance to hit the ball and stay on your back leg. So if you're an arm swinger, you have to shift your front leg, and then you push into that front leg as you swing the bat. And so we go back to the arms, and we make sure we get them out of the way. We put the strap around the neck, or we use the connection balls and get them to feel how they're the sudden, I call it a tilt, but as you tilt, the leg unwinds. The sudden tilt of the torso causes the leg to unwind so quickly that you don't have a chance to use your arms. And when they finally understand that, they will improve rapidly. But something I call ball anxiety is when you try to take your barrel to the ball, instead of creating the arc that the ball runs into, that is almost always an arm problem. Okay?
Okay. Okay.
And then the arm, it's like chicken or the egg. Does my weight shift too early because I swing with my arms, or do I shift my weight, or vice versa? Does the arm swing cause my weight to shift early, or does my weight shift early cause me to use my arms? They're related. They're always together.
Okay. Any thoughts on metrics today? How for hitting instructors and parents and players, can you talk a little bit about metrics in the program?
Yes. Working with Manny Machado here at the Padres complex, they have all this stuff set up, and they asked me if I wanted to turn it on to get the metrics. And I said, I don't have a HitTrax. I don't have a Rapsodo. I don't use Blast Motion. I don't have any of that stuff in my facility. I said, none of those things measure launch quickness, and I'm all about launch quickness. And so when players come to me, they're going to learn launch quickness. Now, their problem is, in order to get recruited or scouted, those scouts and those recruiters want to know those metrics. So they get those metrics somewhere else. They don't get them from me. But what's almost always true, when they have launch quickness, they have the other metrics to within their physical ability. Now, they can improve those metrics in the weight room, but you don't want to improve those metrics by swinging harder or swinging differently. Swinging harder, swinging differently costs you your launch quickness. And if you don't have your launch quickness, you can't barrel the ball. Your bat speeds are irrelevant if you can't barrel the ball. So I don't teach with metrics, but I will acknowledge that once a guy has a good swing, he needs to get those numbers so that when he gets recruited or scouted, he has something to point to.
And what would you tell, a high school kid, maybe even a college player? They're working really hard in your system, and they're, they get back to their schools, and their coach wants them to do certain things, and they might be in conflict with what your system is advocating. How would you suggest a kid handle that?
That's a very typical problem. In fact, Aaron Judge ran into that with the Yankees. You have to be respectful of your coach. What I tell the hitters to do when they want to do what I've taught them and the coach is asking them to do something completely different, have a conversation with the coach, explain what you do and why you like to do it, and see if you can find some common ground. Oftentimes there is no common ground. And so I have several players who do the drills the coach wants them to do, spends the time doing what the coach wants them to do, and then on their own time, they go back to their tee and do what they want to do, what they think they should do, which I agree with them, okay? You can't become uncoachable. The greatest thing is to have a conversation and you can find some common ground. Throughout the whole 2017 season, Aaron Judge had no common ground with the Yankees. And there was always friction between what they said would work and what he was doing. today, there's plenty of, I mean, they leave them alone. It's a tough situation. What I teach is different than what the vast majority of other people teach. Players come to me and they feel something special. They really love it. And then when they go to their team and the coach wants them to do something else, they want to make sure their foot's down before they swing and blah, 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 deceleration, blah, blah, blah. It's the antithesis of what I ask them to do, and it's a problem. And so the real answer, or the best answer for the kid, is hit. If you hit, they'll leave you alone.
Now, that's a great answer, and that leads me into the next comment slash question. You are in Phoenix today working with Manny, and you are actually doing this at the Padres facility. This is kind of a new thing, right, that you're able to do this with a player in the major league organization's facility?
Brand new, especially with 5 or 6, 7 or 8 coaches standing there watching it.
But I think this says something that, to me, what it says is that people now are beginning to take notice and are really being open to what it is that you're trying to do.
Yes. I worked with Aaron Judge in the middle of December, and while I was with him, he said Manny Machado had contacted him and wanted to work with me. Aaron gets a lot of these questions from other players. I call him the big league hitting coach, because when anybody's struggling, they'll call Aaron. But Aaron gets a lot of questions from these other big leaguers. They can all see that he's doing something different, something special, and they can't figure it out, and they would like to. And so Manny contacted Aaron, and then through Manny's agent, I got involved, and now here I am in Phoenix working with him. It's being driven by the players more than by the coaches. And the more players who inquire about it and start to do it, the more coaches need to know what they're doing so they can help them. So it's kind of like a ground up movement, a grassroots movement. And there's so many young kids today that are doing it and having success in travel ball and into high school and into college that, you know, it's gaining traction. In my opinion, everybody will be doing it 10 years from now. Because the concept of launch quickness is what you have to have to deal with 100-mile-an-hour fastball and the tunneled moving pitches.
Well, Rich, listen, we have taken up enough of your time. I want to tell you this, though. I've watched this from a distance for many years, and I just want to thank you for taking the or having the courage to go ahead and do what you did. You know, you started the journey as a thing, I guess, for your kids to try to really help them learn how to become better hitters and enjoy the game. And it's progressed into something that's really, really, really special. And as a guy that coached kids a long time and always appreciated learning new things as I went in my coaching career, I consider this to be outstanding. And I just want to thank you for the impact you're having today, and you will continue to have on the game. Thank you so much for doing what you're doing.
Thank you. A very nice comment. I appreciate your support.
And thanks again for being on the podcast. We appreciate it, and I hope you have a wonderful day.
All right. I enjoyed it. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for listening. If you found today's episode helpful, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with others in your baseball community. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, reach out to us at CoachBaseballWrite.com, and while you're there, check out our coaching and administrator resources. See you next time.